Welcome to Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. We come your way every week here on 89.3 KPCC, the KPCC app on your smart speaker when you tell it to play KPCC, and of course the Film Week podcast available wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. I'm joined this week by film critics Leah Lowenstein, she's film columnist for the Santa Monica Daily Press, and Tim Cogshell, critic for Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com. We begin with the film Shirley, which is a biographical thriller. It's based on the novel of the same name, which brings us the writer Shirley Jackson, but in a fictional milieu. The film stars Elizabeth Moss and Michael Stuhlbarg. It's directed by Josephine Decker, and the screenplay was adapted by Sarah Gubbins. Tim, what did you think of Shirley?
Yeah, I like it quite a lot. Logan Lerman also in this film. And yes, so Shirley Jackson, an actual novelist, rather noted horror novelist, working in the late 50s and early 60s, the writer of The Lottery, the Haunting of Hill House, which have all have been adapted into films.
Turned into a great Robert Wise film, Tim.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Lottery, which is a short film, Larry Yust film, 1969. That is just one of the most frightening films, scariest films, and they showed it to us in junior high. I have never been able to understand why they would show that movie to junior high children. Anyway,
we read it, but didn't see the film.
We saw that little movie. And so note it. Now, this film, like you said, a mostly fictional sort of excerpt from her life. Shirley was, in fact, something of an alcoholic and a recluse. She was, in fact, married to the character that Michael Stuhlbarg plays. They bring in this other young couple into their home. Ostensibly, he wants to be a teacher and a professor at the university, Bennington College, an actual university where her husband worked and his wife is studying there. But they more or less get used as domestics inside the house. And what's really going on is that Shirley is using them as fodder for inspiration for her next book, a rather dire horror book. What's great about this movie is just the pace of it and the acting, particularly of Elizabeth Moss, who is just, you know, endlessly wonderful in everything she does, but also young Odessa Young and Logan Lerman, very, very good in this movie. You can count on Michael Stuhlbarg all the time. But this is a very, very creepy film, and in a certain way, a horror film of its own.
What do you think, Lael, of Shirley?
I agree with Tim. It was pretty good. I remember reading the short story, The Lottery, and being kind of creeped out. And certainly Shirley Jackson is herself an intriguing figure. What I think makes this film kind of elevates it from just sort of typical sort of genre kind of quasi-horror fare is a pretty smart script and really strong acting across the board. There's also really interesting camera work, and I thought the score kind of helps kind of propel the action forward. There's lots of doubling of the characters of the Shirley character and the Rose character. There's so in other words, while Rose is sort of putatively kind of playing the character in a way in Shirley's story that she's writing, there's also doubling between the two of them so that Shirley sees herself in this young woman. And it sort of goes in and out of fantasy and horror, and you never sort of know completely which reality you're in. But I thought in the end, it does make sort of a powerful statement, although in a kind of ambiguous way about womanhood. I don't know if you saw that, Tim, at all, but I felt like the Rose character kind of comes into her own voice, and that was sort of facilitated through this crazy relationship with Shirley Jackson.
Yeah. Shirley being this extremely powerful figure. She was this dominating sort of figure, and she could just sort of overwhelm a young woman like Rose's character in this film. But Rose will not be overtaken that way.
We're talking about the film Shirley, a thriller, which is streaming on Hulu, also available on video on demand platforms, including Lemley's Virtual Cinema and the Frida Virtual Cinema. The film is rated R. Spelling the Dream, a documentary about the 2017 Scripps National Spelling Bee. Sam Rega is the director of Spelling the Dream. It's streaming on Netflix. Leo, what do you think?
Well, I really enjoyed this. I was a big fan of Spellbound, the documentary that won Best Doc, best Doc at the Oscars, maybe 18, 17 years ago, and which was really my introduction to spelling bees and to the fact that the Indian American population was starting to make a real presence at our spelling bees. And this explores that theme further, and it looks at several different families as they vie for a spot on the stage of the Scripps National Spelling Bee. There are the characters in the film are so kind of unique that they're, you know, you just sort of fall in love with them, particularly this one little kid, Akash, who's like 7 years old, who's like a spelling genius. And then there's this, you know, there are other kids who, like, their families have figured out these algorithms and how to, like, memorize, you know, hundreds of thousands of spellings, and they have all their these different techniques. And it, what's fascinating is not just the portraits of the families that are presented, but the discussion of why and how becoming adept at spelling is sort of endemic to the Indian American population because of their mastery of a multiplicity of languages from a very young age in their homeland. So I thought that was really well explored. There's also interviews with former spelling bee champions that was really kind of fascinating. Some of them who had been in that documentary Spellbound, and it just talks about what it means to them culturally to see themselves represented and to be having such an impact in such a large global forum. And also with the Spellbound indicating that the spelling bee was portrayed and or has been broadcast on ESPN for years and years. To them, it's like being part of a national sport. So.
And it's unfortunate, Lael, that this year's, of course, the 2020 version of the Scripps National Spelling Bee was canceled because of COVID-19. We're talking about the Netflix streaming documentary Spelling the Dream. Tim.
Yeah, fantastic. As cricket is not a particularly large physical sport here, athletic here in the United States, Indian Americans are not very often represented when we talk about baseball and football and all of the things that we play. And in fact, the airing of this, I think it was in about 1984, the beginning of the airing of the Spelling Bee on ESPN, gave them this sort of feeling that they were able to engage in a sport of sorts. Very interesting, the story of how this all came to be, why Indian American children are just so doggone good at spelling. There's a reason for it. The reason isn't because their parents are driving them, that sort of tiger mom idea that exists out there. That's not why. That's not the children want to do this. The parents introduce them in the same way that you would introduce a child to baseball or football, and then you know the kid wants to play or they don't, and they let the children choose. But the children can actually see how Indian American children are advancing in this, and then they take a liking to it because they can see it's something that they can do. Language is another reason. English is almost a uniform second language in India. Obviously, there's Hindi. And then most of these children speak three or four different other languages. We see Fareed Zakaria in the film. We see Dr. Sanjay Gupta in the film and other noted Indian Americans. And I really just absolutely adored this movie. 2002 was Spellbound, Lael, and Akila in the Bee was 2006.
Spelling the Dream, documentary rated G, and streaming on Netflix. Sam Rega is the director. We have another documentary out this week, Dykes Camera Action, which looks at the history of queer cinema from a lesbian perspective. The film is directed by Caroline Burler. Tim?
Yeah, the gay cinema scene, Outfest, along with the black cinema scene, was my beat in the early 90s. So when all of that was starting to happen, I was the guy who was covering it for these newspapers and magazines I was working for. So right when John Singleton was making Boys in the Hood, 1991, guys like Greg Araki were making these really cutting-edge gay narrative films, The Living End in 92. And out of that world also came a lesbian queer cinema. So in 1994, you get Rose Troche, who makes a little black and white film called Go Fish that's just absolutely fabulous. And a little bit later, you get Maria Magnetti, who makes The Incredibly True Adventures of Two Girls in Love, a film that I absolutely adored and wrote a glowing review for in 1995, and Hilary Brower, The Sticky Fingers of Time, and on and on. This movie, this documentary, explores all of that, because sometimes we forget that as sort of gay cinema rose in the culture, we mostly associated it with men, longtime companion. and very often with the AIDS crisis. The cinema that gay women were making was quite different at the time. We go way back. You can go all the way back to Barbara Hammer, but even in 1992, she makes her movie Nitrate Kisses, which is just a different sort of tone and attitude about gay culture, about lesbian culture, than what the men were making, than what the gay men were making. Really interesting documentary.
We're talking about the Doc Dykes Camera Action from director Caroline Berler. Leah, what'd you think?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Tim. This was a really interesting documentary. I think my only kind of objection to it was that it was only like 60 minutes long. And I felt like it was a great sort of like introduction to what should have been a survey class in queer cinema with regard to specifically lesbian films. That's one of the points that the filmmakers make, is that they when they started to see gay lives represented on screen, it was largely through the male perspective and the male gaze, and with regard to gay male relationships, and that there was really a void in terms of representing women. So it was really helpful to see them interviewed and to talk about examples that they had, that had inspired them. Maya Darren being one, I think, which was one of the first ones that was brought up. But I would have liked to see more than just, you know, like a 3-second clip from so many films. There was just so much it could have used. Could have used a little more depth. I think as an example, The Celluloid Closet would be the longer doc that sort of goes into a lot of this stuff, and this is kind of a follow-up to that.
The film Dykes Camera Action is available on the Frida Virtual Cinema. The documentary is unrated. The action thriller Becky stars Joel McHale, Kevin James, and Lulu Wilson. Jonathan Mallott and Carrie Mernion are the directors of the film. Leah, what'd you think of Becky?
Well, it's a gross out fest in a lot of ways. There's a lot of violence in here. So just to get that out of the way first. Becky is played by Lulu Wilson. She's a 15-year-old whose mother has recently died of cancer, and her dad is taking her to their old family home in the country for a weekend getaway. And unbeknownst to her, he also plans to let her know that he's becoming engaged to his girlfriend, and so he's invited his girlfriend and her son to stay with them. Girlfriend happens to be biracial, Becky is not happy when she finds this out. She's mad at the dad. She's sort of mad at life, and she's just a generally pissed off teenager. At the same time, there's been a prison escape. These guys. These like very hardened criminals led by Kevin James as a neo-Nazi skinhead have gotten out of jail, and they're making their way oddly towards the same kind of house in the country where Becky and her family are now staying. This results in a huge, like, bloody conflict, lots of shooting, lots of gore, but Becky is the sort of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, like thinking on her feet, and she's pretty fabulous. That Lulu Wilson, I hadn't really seen her in a lot of stuff, but she is a very scrappy heroine, and if you can handle the gross out stuff, and there's some pretty gross stuff, this is it's an entertaining it's quite a ride.
Becky is the film. Tim, you can give us about a 45-second review of this.
Yeah. Perfectly serviceable thriller, just as Leah says. Joel McHale playing her dad, that's a little strange. I watched almost all of this movie before I knew that was Kevin James playing that Nazi with that beard. And this thing I'm watching, I'm like, when's Kevin James going to be in the movie? And I'm like, my God, that's him. He's standing right there. He's the lead bad guy, unrecognizable, vicious in this movie.
Becky from directors Jonathan Mallott and Carrie Mernion. It's rated R. You can see it on Vudu Video On Demand. Coming up, we'll hear about the documentary You Don't Know Me, N-O-M-I, which takes a look at the lasting effect of Paul Verhoeven's Showgirls. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC on your smart speaker if you tell it to play KPCC, and on the KPCC app on your phone or your tablet. I'm joined this week by film critics Tim Cogshell and Lael Lowenstein. We're talking about what's available to stream or to see on video on demand. I don't know if your household is like mine, but there are movies that come on television that my wife and I see each other watch. We'll sort of roll our eyes at, you know, these ones that we sort of fall into the hole of the films. One of them for me is Showgirls. Whenever it's on, it's just, I can't avert my eyes. It's just like watching one of the biggest misfires you'll ever see. You Don't Know Me is a documentary about the Showgirls effect, so to speak. Paul Verhoeven's film from 1995. Jeffrey McHale is the director of the movie. Lael, what'd you think of You Don't Know Me, N-O-M-I?
Well, Larry, you said it right. Most people do kind of have that reaction to Showgirls. They it's sort of a horrifying joke that you can't look away from. And that's really the premise of You Don't Know Me. It actually, it does a remarkable thing, which is it takes Showgirls, which was a joke and became one of the biggest flops of all time and was much touted because it was Paul Verhoeven and he had done Basic Instinct and lots of other edgy films, and it just became an abysmal flop. And it sort of reconsiders it. It says it may be possibly a misunderstood masterpiece, but it also may be, you know, a masterpiece because of its disaster status in a way. It also shows how Showgirls has been recast as a comedy, even though at the time it was very much considered to be a drama. But now, in retrospect, it's sort of, even Verhoeven has said, you know, we were intending it to be a comedy. And there have been, of course, a number of Showgirls retrospectives, sort of chant-alongs. There have been plays mounted where people perform the parts. It was a crazy, wild roller coaster of a film, and it certainly did damage Elizabeth Berkley's career. That's the part of it that I wish this fascinating documentary had spent a little more time on. She's given sort of a coda at the end where you think, oh, okay, so she turned out okay, but really everyone else rebounded. Paul Verhoeven went on to do, he was sort of exiled for a while, but he went on to do other things, including Elle last year. But Elizabeth Berkley never really did. So it's kind of a poignant truism that she ended up coming to kind of live a life in ignominy.
Well, and which is so unfortunate because I felt like her performance was a very brave one. She took tremendous risks. The film didn't turn out, obviously, despite what Verhoeven says. It's hard for me to believe it really came out the way that he intended. But she took great risks in that role.
She did, and he did. There are quotes with him where he says, this was really all on me. This is not her. You know, if there are issues with it, it's the directing. But it was so kind of broadly over the top. I mean, everything, you know, his direction, everything from his direction to the lip gloss that's layered on and the makeup and the nails and they're talking about nails and chips. And that's just how he reduces everything. But you know, it's hard to know really what was in his mind when he was making the film. But certainly it didn't turn out the way anyone intended.
We're talking about the documentary You Don't Know Me, Know Me, the character from Showgirls, Paul Verhoeven's 1995 film. Tim, what did you think of the documentary?
I like the documentary very much. You know what? I know what was in Paul Verhoeven's mind in 95. I interviewed him in 95. I did the junket for this movie in 95. And I don't remember him specifically telling me, you know, this is a drama, but it's an outlandish drama. It's meant to be outlandish. Like Valley of the Dolls is an outlandish drama, Patty Duke, which pops up in this little movie here too. And for that matter, if you think about a movie like All About Eve, just watch it raw today. All of the acting is insane. Bette Davis's eyes. It's all crazy. It's a Peyton Place. Mommy Dearest pops up in this movie too. So even in 1995, I understood this to be a perfectly outlandish movie. But like you, Larry, I thought Elizabeth Berkley was absolutely fantastic in what she was doing, because I knew she was being directed by the director to achieve the state of heightened everything. And to me, she put herself in the hands of that director and said, I will go for it. So I just don't understand. I never understood what the backlash was to her. Is it often funny when it's not meant to be? Sure it is. But then again, you know, I got to tell you, if you try to watch Peyton Place today, and you will just crack up all the way through it. So the misogyny that exists inside the film itself, and how that accrues back to Verhoeven and Joe Esterhaas, the writer of the film. You know, it's hard not to look at that today without looking through the prism of the Me Too movement and what women are put through. The way I always felt about this movie, though, is Nomi, her name is even a, you know, play on words. Nomi was just a badass, wicked feminist hero. She didn't take nothing from nobody. She would literally cut you, had a switchblade. And I just thought that even in the context of the film, that character was just insanely brave. And at the end of that movie, when she takes that vengeance out on the guy that does that terrible thing, that's just one of the most cathartic scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
We're talking about You Don't Know Me, the documentary about the film Showgirls and how it was received and how the film has aged over the past 25 years. Jeffrey McHale, the director, it's unrated and it's available on multiple video on demand platforms starting the middle of next week. Think Like a Dog, a family comedic drama, stars Megan Fox and Josh Duhamel. The film is directed and co-written by Gil Younger. Tim?
Well, this one I think is for really young kids, like 12 or younger. It's fairly silly, but it's also kind of techie with a little bit of junior high class politics in it, too. You have this little boy, he's quite bright. He has this friend in Asia, and they play this game online together, and they're also building all kinds of doodads and gadgets together. He does something he's not supposed to do when he taps himself into a satellite that he's not supposed to tap himself into, and for some reason, he puts this gadget on his dog's head. Now, when the movie begins, we can already hear the dog talking, thinking, as it were. But after this accident happens where him and the dog get sort of psychically connected, now he can hear the dog thinking. There's going to be all kinds of family strife that goes on. There's this science experiment and this evil sort of tech genius who's going to want to come in and get this technology. Look, it's a perfectly okay. Gil Younger directed this. And Gil Younger directed in 2001 a film called Black Knight, which is this ridiculously popular movie, Martin Lawrence movie for black folks. All of these movies have the exact same sensibility. Gil is a longtime TV director, goes all the way back to Benson.
Oh, wow.
Empty Nest, one of those guys. So his sense of comedy is just that 80s sense of funny. And I'm sorry, it cracks me up. It just cracks me up.
Think Like a Dog. Lael?
I just didn't think it was funny enough. I mean, I think... if you're going to do a talking dog or talking baby movie like A Look Who's Talking or something like that, you really need to go all in. And I think this movie sort of tried to skirt between a few different genres. Like it had the whole kind of tech, the whole weird scary tech thing where they find out what the kid has done and it looks like they're going to come after him and shove him in. There's some stuff that happens that was not so good. And then there's he's got a crush on a girl and maybe talking to the dog will help him figure out how to like get ahead with the girl. Like it just wanted to be several different things. And there's the family drama. I thought it should have just picked a side and stuck with it rather than trying to be too many different things to too many different people and not none of them terribly well.
Think Like a Dog, rated PG, and it's streaming starting middle of next week on multiple video on demand platforms. Outback, an Australian thriller starring Lauren Lofberg and Taylor Weiss. Mike Green directed and co-wrote it with Brian Kelly. Tim.
Well, there are five credited people in the cast of this movie, but effectively there are really only two people in this movie after the first 10 minutes or so, up until about the last 30 seconds or so. This young man and this young woman who are going to get lost in the outback of Australia, which of course would bring a whole bunch of tension, but there's a tension in this movie well before they get lost out there. When this movie starts, this is a couple that are on a trip, a long planned trip to Australia, and something has already happened to put them at odds with each other. And fairly soon we find out that he proposed and she said no, but they already paid for the trip. So they go anyway. It becomes a very dark and dire movie, particularly after they get lost in the outback. But I like the way this debuting director, Mike Green, creeps up on all of that. He puts you in this other movie where we learn about these people. We come to understand why they're kind of at each other and who they are and what they could have been. And then he gets them lost in the outback. Interesting movie.
Outback, the Australian film, is rated R, available on multiple video on demand platforms, again, starting middle of next week. We're going to take an opportunity to hear our critics' picks about some other things that have been around for a while, or our new series that are streaming. Lael, let's start with you and talk about Spellbound, because you were just talking about that documentary from a number of years ago related to this week's Spelling the Dream.
Yes, and I'm so glad to have a chance to talk about that because that was the first time a lot of people even became aware of the National Spelling Bee or really I should say of how much inherent drama was packed into it, because it was just an incredibly exciting film to watch. It focuses on eight competitors who travel to Washington, D.C. and are vying for the title. And it's incredibly intense. It's like, you can just feel the sweat dripping down your brow and down the brows of these kids as you watch them. It absolutely still holds up. There's it's like just a good old fashioned doc with like great personalities. Like, this is the kind of documentary that I love where the characters really stand out. It's kind of a character driven doc. Just to this day, I think it's one that I would highly recommend.
I'm also glad to see you recently saw Martin Scorsese's After Hours from 1985, which I haven't seen since it came out, and I saw it in the theater, but I just thought it was so funny. I loved that movie.
Oh yeah, watch it again, Larry. It still really holds up. It's got Griffin Dunne, Rosanna Arquette, and just a cast. I mean, Catherine O'Hara, Terry Garr, it's this kind of fascinating, trippy night in New York City where one thing leads to another. And you know, I was talking with some friends about how could you even make a movie like that today, because of course back then there were he had no cell phone, he appears not to have a credit card, and so it's this whole concatenation of events that leads to his like being finding himself completely bereft. And today I think you'd have to have no cell phone and no mask and nobody who knew you.
Yeah.
And that's how
After Hours, Martin Scorsese, 1985 film, is available on Amazon Prime. Tim, I've got to find out about this TV series that you'd want to talk about, Sherman's Showcase. What is it?
Sherman's Showcase is this fabulous show from creators Bashir Sudhadlan and Dilo Riddle, all right? So they're both in the show. Bashir plays a character who's kind of like Don Cornelius, right? The context of this show is a sort of fake music variety interview game show faux documentary. A little bit like Soul Train and Solid Gold meets American Bandstand with touches of Sonny and Cher, with this character at the center of it. The idea is that Sherman's Showcase is the show that initially went on the air on July 1st, 1972, literally. And has been on for 40 years. It cracks me up that the lead character, Sherman, looks exactly the same no matter what clip they're showing. They'll put him in a scene. It'll be from 1986. He looks the same. It'll be from 1974. He looks the same. It'll be from 2020. He looks the same. Characters from today and from back in the day across the arc of the show, great musical performances. It's making fun of all of that culture. And these two guys, Bashir and DeLalo, they're both these Harvard grads who worked on Jimmy Fallon's show, writing for Jimmy Fallon. So to get their sense of humor, but it's a hysterical show. If your guy's about our age, I'm sorry, you cannot watch this show without just cracking.
Well, I was gonna say this is our youth. Sherman's Showcase is now streaming on Hulu, originally on IFC. Our film critics this week, Leo Lowenstein and Tim Cogshell. Coming up, we'll talk about what the obstacles are to Hollywood production starting to reopen and what plans are being made for projects going back into production. You're listening to Film Week on KPCC.